T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Good morning and welcome to the morning briefing for Monday, October 30th, 2017. I'm your host, Eric Thame. Jake Hughes is your producer. And coming up on today's wonderful Monday show, I know, wonderful Monday, they don't go together typically, but today, there's a little bit of wonderfulness coming your way right here. We're going to play our interview with the head of the American Legion's Veterans Affairs Department, Lou Celli. Now, Lou talked to us about the CHOICE program, CARE, and much more that affects the vet community at large, and it's information you are going to want to hear. So we're going to replay that for you today. And then Brandon Limprich, head of the Miami chapter of Weed for Warriors, will join us to talk about several of their members who are helping the recovery effort in Puerto Rico. Now, the media has moved on to other stories, so what's still going on down in Puerto Rico may shock you. All of that still to come on the morning briefing, and it kicks off now as Jake Hughes joins us in studio on what is a happy morning for Houston Astros fans, I imagine, Jake.
Very much, very happy. We are one away, baby. One away.
Extra innings.
I know, right? They make us work for it. I will admit that, but I think we're going to take it out.
Yeah, it's been an interesting World Series for sure. My prediction was that the Dodgers would win. Still a chance that that may happen. They've got to go back to Los Angeles, I think, for both of the next two games,
yep.
Right? Yeah, so, you're going to have to win on the road. Los Angeles team has been pretty good at winning at home, but we will see about that. What do you think? Do you think that your team, I know you think your team's going to win it. Do you think they win it in 6 or 7?
I am going to say 6 because I'm an optimist.
Yeah, there you go. It takes some of the drama out of it if they win it in 6. You're like, oh, what would game 7 have been like where anyone could win? Oh, the pressure. But last night, when I went to sleep, the Dodgers were up, and then, they ended up not up at the end of the game. Although at least one television station out in Los Angeles ran a promo for the news that was coming on after the game, and it said Dodgers win down at the bottom. So yeah, it's always funny when that happens, but we'll see what happens over the next couple of days. Essentially, they get a day off today, so you get to relax. Those of you who are up until what time did the game end?
I don't even know.
It's like 2 a.m. or something like that. From what I was reading. Again, I was long asleep by that point.
Yeah, me too. I just checked the scores in the morning.
Yeah, some sad news coming from Afghanistan as the DOD on Sunday released the name of a soldier who died last week in a helicopter crash in Afghanistan. Chief Warrant Officer 2 Jacob Sims, 36 years old, died Friday in Logar Province, Afghanistan, from wounds sustained in the crash, according to a statement from DOD. Sims was supporting Operation Freedom Sentinel, assigned to 4th Battalion, 160th Special Operations Aviation Regiment, stationed at Joint Base Lewis McChord in Washington. 6 other service members were also injured in that crash. The military has not released much information on the crash. What they have said is that the helicopter was not downed by enemy fire, so it appears to be some sort of mechanical error. Sims was born in Oklahoma, joined the Army in August of 99, according to information from Special Operations Command. After completing his initial entry training, he was assigned to Fort Bragg as a combat engineer. Later completed warrant officer flight training and was assigned to Fort Wainwright, Alaska as a Black Hawk helicopter pilot, and then volunteered to serve in the 160th Special Operations Aviation Regiment, graduating from Officer Green Platoon in April 2014. He was assigned to the regiment's A Company, 4th Battalion on Joint Base Lewis McChord. He's an MH-47G pilot in command and company aviation safety officer. So never good to hear about that. It serves as a reminder that we are still actively in Afghanistan. That situation over there, still not good. The Taliban still coming back. You've got ISIS popping up over there. Al-Qaeda never left there. The Haqqani Network, all sorts of organizations over there that our regular military and special operations are over there dealing with. And this sounds like he was with special operations helicopter. based at Joint Base Lewis-McChord. So we know that there are Ranger battalions out there. There are, I believe, Green Berets out there as well. I mean, there's a lot of stuff out there. But these guys, I know a guy who flies with a special operations unit, and it's a difficult life that they live. They are the best of the best at what they do. They also get put into the most dangerous situations. But in this one, Jake, it sounds like it was more of a mechanical issue than any sort of like enemy fire bringing it down.
Yeah, it really is sad when you hear stuff like that. I mean, it's one thing to die in enemy combat, but just because it's one of those things you can't control with a mechanical error like that. And it leaves the questions of could it have been prevented? Who did someone miss a bolt or something somewhere? But we really are never going to know. Well, I mean, I don't think they're going to tell us. The military will know eventually, but yeah.
That's just kind of the way it goes with those things. It's of course sad, and it's a reminder because you don't hear too often about our service members dying in Afghanistan or Iraq or Syria or any of the places where we are. So when it does happen, particularly for the civilian world, I think it's a reminder to them like, whoa, we're still in Afghanistan. Yeah, we're still in Afghanistan. We never left Afghanistan. No one ever said we were leaving Afghanistan. Essentially, well, someone did, but he's no longer in office, and his drawdown plans didn't quite go according to plan. So things are, we're still over there. They've raised troop numbers in Afghanistan recently. When I was there, 2010, 2011 is when they were kind of starting to have a bit of a drawdown there and reduce the numbers. But what they saw was when you reduce the numbers, the Taliban starts getting more footholds over there. And then ISIS starts sneaking in. So, yeah, that job is not done over there. Will it ever be done? That's a question that we could talk about for hours and hours. Here's an interesting question, Jake. There's a survey that was put out. I believe this survey was done by Military Times. We're going to have to look at that. Where they're doing the survey. Okay, so the survey is about the Marine Corps War Memorial. You know what the Marine Corps War Memorial is?
Is that the tower?
No, the statue of the Iwo Jima.
Oh, the Iwo Jima Memorial.
Not the Iwo Jima Memorial. It's at Arlington National Cemetery, essentially, and the Marine Corps War Memorial is the statue of. It's a statue of them putting up the flag.
Yeah. Okay. I know what you're talking about.
So it's at Arlington National Cemetery, but here's the thing about Arlington National Cemetery. So a limited amount of space there, and they're talking about putting graves closer and closer to that memorial. So the survey that's being put out, and this one's coming from Arlington National Cemetery, this survey they are conducting, the cemetery currently holds more than 7,000 funeral services a year, and with that number, if it keeps up, in the next 25 years, Arlington will reach its capacity. So they're looking at ways to basically have more space to put people in there. What do you think about that? Do you think putting them closer to a memorial or even around a memorial, do you think that is a negative? Do you think that brings more attention to the memorial? Do they need to be Marines that are buried around the memorial? I mean, how do you look at something like that?
Well, there are memorials inside of Arlington National Cemetery. Like there's the memorial to the Challenger. And then there's the Confederate War Memorial and other things like that. So it doesn't bother me too much. And especially with what you said, the problem creeping up of we're running out of space. Well, where else are we going to, we going to have to shut down Arlington at some point, or are we going to start making a little couple concessions about where we bury them in that area?
Yeah, I think what a lot of people would say is, what you need to do is have a second national cemetery down there. Just need to find land, knock down some old derelict buildings or something like that and go that route. But
just go ahead and destroy Fort Myer. I'd be okay with that.
I don't even know anything about that fort. So you guys have too many forts in the Army. You start driving around, you're like, oh, fort whatever. That must be like some old Civil War. Nope, active duty. Still there. All people just going around. Soldiers doing soldiery things.
There's like three of them inside of Washington, D.C. alone, and they're all really small.
Which is weird. And then you have, of course, like the Marine Corps barracks and all that stuff. On my way home, I drive a route that I typically see Marines every day walking around, and every once in a while, roll down the window and give them a good go Navy and let them know. let them know who's driving by, and they look at me like, what did he say? Most of the time, I don't think they can hear me, but yeah. So the Army, this is an older story. We don't need to go into that. Let's look at what's on ConnectingVets.com right now. And really some great and interesting information and info. It's Monday. My brain's not.
That's all, folks.
My brain's not working all that well. So we have a story there on the Defense POW MIA Accounting Agency. Now, we spoke with Kelly McKegg, retired Major General from the U.S. Air Force, who was on with us Friday to talk about what the POW MIA Accounting Agency is doing. He just took over there in September. And, of course, the end of the fiscal year, we all know October comes around, fiscal year is over, that's when all the reports come out. They found 183 of those still missing in action last year. But what I've found is that from that interview and from the story, what shocks people, there are over 80,000 still listed as MIA, POW or MIA. Of course, as we talked to the general last week, there are no POWs in Vietnam, so you can squash that idea that some people have. 80,000 just since World War II. We're not counting World War I. We're not counting, you know, the Civil War. We're not counting any of those things. We're going back to World War II only. That's under the charter that DPAA, that's the Defense POW MIA Accounting Agency, does. Did that number surprise you, the 80,000 overall?
Yeah, it really did when I first learned it, because you think about these things, especially as time has marched on, you thought, oh, well, of course, we'll be able to count for everyone. We have DNA technology and other things like that.
Yeah.
But you think of how many people went down in ships in deep water during World War II.
That's a big one.
Yeah.
That's a big one.
And then just the chaos of war, and this the good chance that as much as we don't like to talk about it, we may never be able to account for everybody. But
No, definitely won't. Now, what they'll be able to do with some of those ships that went down, maybe locate the ship like they found the USS Indianapolis. That, of course, was the ship that was bringing the atomic bomb to be dropped on Hiroshima. Believe bringing it to Guam, dropped it off at Guam, and then left from Guam and was torpedoed by a Japanese submarine. Quite a few went down with the ship. Quite a few survived. But because it was on kind of a secret mission, it was on radio silence, never put out a message. So they were out there in the water for days before any rescue effort found them. And it was essentially until after the ship didn't arrive where it was supposed to be going that they sent out planes looking for them. While they were out in the water, sharks started showing up and ate a large number of people out there, which imagine how horrifying that is. You're floating in the water with a couple hundred of your shipmates, and you're out there, and you don't know if or when a rescue is coming, and then all of a sudden people just start getting yanked underwater. And
I can't imagine.
Oh, no. It's one of the most horrifying stories of all time, which is part of why it's included in the movie Jaws. Captain Quint in Jaws tells the story of the Indianapolis, because that character is supposed to have been on the Indianapolis, and that's why he became a shark hunter, essentially, because of after seeing all his buddies get eaten by the sharks and all that horrifying stuff. You know, the other thing that I've found with that story, which we put out, you can find it. It's on ConnectingVets.com. You can find it at Connecting Vets on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube. You can find our stories on there as well. A lot of people shocked at the breakdown. You mentioned World War II. I mentioned 80,000 people still missing overall. Many people think that Vietnam is where most of the MIA are because of the Hollywood presentation of it. There are a lot of movies about people being missing in action in Vietnam, even years after the fact. Rambo, that was one. First Blood Part 2. Not the first Rambo. First Rambo's up in the Pacific Northwest someplace. The sequel to Rambo, he goes to Vietnam to free prisoners, essentially. Delta Force with Chuck Norris, he goes over there to free prisoners in Vietnam. I think because of all those movies and all that pop culture being told, like, hey, there may still be people in Vietnam. I remember that as a kid that, like, you know, well, in the 80s, so we're talking over a decade after the Vietnam War came to an end, there may still be prisoners of war in Vietnam. And then some people still believe to this day that there might be in Vietnam, Cambodia, Laos, over in that area. But then when you look at it, out of the 80,000, only about 1,600 MIA are from Vietnam. And the majority of those seem to be pilots, planes that went down and they just never located them because they went down in the jungle. 70,000 of the 80,000, over 70,000, it's like 72,000, are from World War II.
Yeah, that shocked me. I will admit that, because like you said, I thought that most of the missing came from Vietnam because there were just so chaotic over there. But like I just mentioned earlier, ships lost at sea and then plane crashes and stuff like that. Yeah. And I didn't know that.
Not only that, it's the scale of World War II that is so much larger than anything that we can even put our heads around at this point. I mean, if you weren't there and you didn't see it, you can watch documentaries and you start realizing like, oh, these units, there were people that were, you know, there were battles that were fought on islands where a platoon would go missing. And that was like, all right, well, they have 50,000 people on that island. If a group of 100 of them went missing, that's horrifying, but you got to keep moving, man. There's a war to be fought. They've found entire like units in the jungles in New Guinea and places like that who just were out there, got ambushed, got mowed down. The enemy didn't tell anybody about them. Nobody really knew where they were, and they found them. Now, what's interesting about that is in the Pacific specifically, and General McKeg talked about this, the race against time factor, where the weather out there, I mean, if you put a piece of meat out in Guam, where I was stationed, put it out there, the animals are going to start taking parts of it. The weather is going, I mean, it'll be gone so quickly. And essentially, eventually, the bones will be gone too, because the soil out there is typically very acidic in a lot of places. And a lot of these island chains where the battles in the Pacific were fought. And then you have in Europe, where it was just a larger number of people. Now you're also going to have those who were essentially vaporized, that you're not going to find them as well. You're going to have those who were on secret missions who went lost. I mean, it's such a massive, massive conflict. But even more than that, what people find even more surprising, they can say, you know, let's look at the numbers of World War II versus Vietnam. And even if you thought, you know, Vietnam was where most of the MIA came from, you can kind of understand with World War II. Korea, like 5 times as many missing in action from Korea than from Vietnam. And that war often gets just totally forgotten in the grand scheme of things, because you had World War II in the 40s, which was a big one. We came out on the winning side there. Korean War was essentially a stalemate. Looked like we were going to win. And then China jumped in on behalf of the North Koreans. And it became a stalemate. It became a war by proxy with China fighting against the U.S. through North Korea. So it was a very interesting war that didn't have much of an end to it. It was just like, all right, we're here, you're there. Here's the parallel. We're going to put a fence up there. We're going to landmine the crap out of the area. And then that's it. We're done. Vietnam, on the other hand, another big one, although number-wise smaller than both, of course, World War II and Korea. But it's one that, again, had a definitive end where we left. You know, the helicopters headed out of Saigon, that whole image of us essentially losing a war for the first time. Because of that, Korea gets lost in the shuffle, I think, because it was this kind of war without an end. I mean, technically, we're still at war with North Korea. People asking, like, you know, will the president declare war on North Korea? He doesn't need to. We're still in a state of war.
Yeah, well, I think it's also because, like you said, we're sandwiched between these two massive conflicts in the pop culture, in the mind's eye of World War II, where it can be argued that there was one of the few times when the lines between good and bad were so clear.
Yeah.
And then you have Vietnam, which has been, you know, this... I don't know what the word I want to look at, word I'm looking for here is, but in pop culture, it's so this big Leviathan of a thing that, you know, some people for it, some against it, the anti-war movement,
the
and that
era
stuff.
Where it happened, and the fact that Hollywood had become it had become politicized. Essentially, you had a lot of people who were not happy that we were over there. You had essentially the children of World War II veterans. You had the World War II veterans who. It was a very interesting time period and full of conflict, whereas the 50s, which kind of led into the 60s, the 50s are a more interesting time period than people often give it credit for. But in the 50s, you had Korea going on. And here's a question for you, Jake.
Mm-hmm.
Name me a movie about the Korean War. Yeah, not that easy, is it?
I'm sure if I thought, I'm pretty sure there's a John Wayne movie about it.
Oh, there's a few movies about the Korean War, but I mean, off the top of your head, now give me 3 movies about the Vietnam War.
Oh God, Platoon, Boys in Company C, Full Metal Jacket.
There's 3 right there. That's how, despite the fact that Korea was a larger conflict, more Americans gave their lives in Korea, a substantial number more MIA from the Korean War than from Vietnam, but because of the outsized influence of Hollywood. Again, we often don't remember it. So that's kind of how it shocks people. But I look at them and I say, yeah, there's four or five times as many more MIA in Korea. There's about four or five times as many people lost their lives in Korea, too. But people don't know about that because there aren't a lot of movies about it. And that's an interesting thing that comes up when I talk with my veteran friends, where you go, you know, looking at it historically, a lot of the time it is based on, this is where Hollywood told us. This is what Hollywood told us about things. You got to remember who's making those movies too. There's not a lot of veterans out there doing a lot of things. You have some. Oliver Stone. There's a veteran, a Vietnam veteran. We had Dale Dye on the show. Works as a military advisor for a lot of films out there. But overall, not a lot of veterans out there. A lot of people who don't have a great familiarity with the military making the movies and making the choices, not based on what may be important to the military, but based on what they. What story they can tell from their perspective.
On top of that, there are no video games about Korea. There's video games about World War I, World War II, Vietnam. I can't think of any that were stationed in the Korean War. And that's another big area of pop culture, especially these days. Like,
oh, yeah. World War I became much, much more popular in the last 2 years because of a video game that came out called Battlefield 1, which is set in World War One, and is a fascinating game, a fascinating way that they made the game. It's really an interesting thing. So, speaking of movies, we talked about it last week. Thank You for Your Service, the movie, came out. Did you see it this weekend or anything?
No, and I am not going to see it.
I tend to avoid military-themed entertainment just in general. Now, it's ratings, so 77% on Rotten Tomatoes. That's certified fresh. It's not great, but it's pretty good. 6.4 out of 10 on IMDb. Well, if you're putting that on a 100-point scale, that gives the movie a D. 6.4 out of 10 is a 64 out of 100, so yeah, there you go.
Well, I mean, if you look at what I posted on connectingbets.com, a little preview of the movie based on the different reviews from people, is that I brought up the point that the director, Jason Hall, wanted to start a conversation about how we can help veterans. Well, my thing is, the conversation that's been started might not be the one he intended. The conversation now might be, would veterans be better served by focus on making a good movie first and then have the message come second?
Yeah. Well, there are a lot of interesting takes on it. Here's the thing. When you look at like Rotten Tomatoes, the majority of people on Rotten Tomatoes, not veterans, certainly. So the veteran perspective on it is going to be missing. Peter Travers of Rolling Stone says it's fantastic. Here's the thing. Doesn't even say it's fantastic. They give him like, hey, he certified it fresh. He gave it a 2.5 out of 4. Again, that's like a D. That's not saying it's a good movie. Let's see. Thank You for Your Service. Adam Graham of Detroit News says it's a C+. Brad Wheeler of the Gold Globe and Mail. Here's another interesting one. There's something meek at Thank You for Your Service's core. That's the line that they have on Rotten Tomatoes for him. His rating, though, 2.5 out of 4. Well, that's the same one that Peter Travers gave it, but they said he says it's fresh. But then Brad Wheeler from the Globe and Mail, they say he says it's rotten.
It's something I've said for years. You can't fully trust critics because everyone has their different perspectives, and there's things that go into these types of reviews. And for me personally, the reason I'm not going to see it is I grow tired of, now, he prefaced this by saying that I'm a disabled veteran myself. So, but I get tired of seeing the tragic hero portrayal of veterans, the one that makes us all look like we're damaged goods or just ticking time bombs or something. I grow tired of that portrayal in media.
Yeah, no, it is very interesting. And there's also, how about this review? This is Scott Marks from the San Diego Reader saying, keep moving, folks. There's nothing here you haven't seen done better 100 times before. 0 out of 5.
Mm-hmm.
Oof, that's a rough one. So, you know, you talk about, you talk about the critics out there are like, this tells an important story, tells the story of veterans so well. It does it? How do you know?
Yeah.
You know, that's the interesting thing about film critics. The veteran community, some seem to have liked it, some seem to have not liked it. And there you go. That's all you need to know. Here's the last one. Matt Goldberg of Collider gave it a C. Got a rotten rating from him, though. Despite its good intentions, the film is little more than the bumper sticker it seeks to critique. That's the other thing. The interesting conversation, and we're in our last minute of the first segment here, again, coming up, Lou Celi of the American Legion. thank you for your service, and people saying like, well, what a horrible title. I don't like it when people say that because it doesn't mean anything. Yes, that's why they chose that as the title. It's supposed to be to incite that in you. It's not a movie saying like, thank you for your service. Here's a great movie for you. No, it's about the hollowness of that statement and how, you know, I think when you hear it come from a fellow veteran sometimes, that can mean something, but when you hear it come from someone who doesn't know anything about you, just other than the fact that, oh, you were in the Army, Jake? Well, thank you for your service. And you're like, well, what do you mean? You don't know what my service was. How do you know?
You weren't there, man.
How do you know that Jake Hughes wasn't in Leavenworth for his entire 13 years for crimes that he committed?
Hey, I can either confirm or deny.
It's the morning briefing. Lucelli from the American Legion after this.
Helping military veterans stay connected.
We make it easy.
We are CBS Radio's ConnectingVets.com. Connecting vets every day.
Online and all over social media. Facebook, YouTube, Instagram, and Twitter at Connecting Vets.
Welcome back to the morning briefing on CBS Radio's ConnectingVets.com. Connecting Vets every day. It is the morning briefing and it is October 30th, 2017. Already a great show under our belts and we've still got more to come. And each and every day there's more coming to ConnectingVets.com. That's the website built by veterans for veterans because each and every member of our team is either a veteran themselves or extremely closely related to the veteran community. How close, you ask? Well, how about spouse of a veteran? How about the children of veterans? And of course, the veterans themselves, like myself and Jake. 13 years in the Army for me, 13 years in the Navy for me, 13 years in the Army for Jake. And actually, the rest of our team that's here this morning, it's all Navy. Yeah, we got Jonathan Copanger, Navy veteran, Phil Briggs, Navy veteran, but we have a variety of veterans on our team working each and every day to bring you the news, the information, the entertainment that you want and need, whether you knew it or not. And the best way to be kept abreast of what we are doing at Connecting Vets, follow us on social media. We are at Connecting Vets on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube, bringing you the latest and greatest from around the vet sphere, the world of veterans. In fact, our next guest is a veteran. Yeah. He's the head of the Miami chapter of Weed for Warriors, and his name is Brandon Limprich, and he is going to talk to us about several of his organization's members who are helping the recovery effort in Puerto Rico. Now, the media's moved on to other stories, but what's still going on down in Puerto Rico may shock you. So we're going to talk to Brandon about that, but first, before we start, I want to welcome him to the show. Good morning, Brandon. How are you today?
Good morning, guys. How's it going? Just waking up, so still having my coffee, but it's already been a good morning.
You and me both. I mean, I've been up for like 3 hours at this point, but still, I'm still waking up. Now, Brandon, before we talk about everything going on down in Puerto Rico, let's talk just a little bit about your background. As I understand it, you are a veteran yourself, so where are you from, when did you join, and what did you do while you were in?
Originally born and raised in Miami, Florida. Went through the whole, you know, got out of high school, didn't really know which route I was going to go through. So, you know, my big brother went to the military, so why not follow in big brother's footsteps? Went ahead and originally joined the Air Force back in 2009. During basic training, came through some complications and whatnot with my tattoos that I have. So bronze wearing medalist decided, we're going to go ahead and chapter these guys out with tattoos. This was back in 2009. So got out of the Air Force on an entry level separation and said, hey, my dream's not done. My task isn't over. I need to continue serving. So went ahead, signed up a second time, and this time was in the Army. So left. Got stationed with the 82nd. I was with the 82nd in 2012. We deployed over to Afghanistan, came back, and due to the IED blast that I was involved in, I was no longer able to continue my service. So got out and, like always, continued service. Once I got out, I didn't really know which route to go. Everybody gets out, they go to the VA. Fortunately, I went to the VA, and the VA brought me to a new chapter of addiction, we could call it. You know, went in there, got a lifetime supply of Percocet, you know, and they said, take this, you'll feel all right. I said, okay. I know a lot about Percocet. I know it's going to make me feel all right, but is it really going to, you know, affect me personally? And it honestly didn't. It turned me into what I like to call a zombie to society. You know, I didn't feel like doing anything. I gained over 50 pounds, being on these medications. That one Percocet led to 12 other different pills. So you could imagine the amount of side effects, that I was going through on a daily basis. So along with the pill addiction came alcohol addiction. I was drinking about roughly a 12 pack a day. Normally when it was a 12 pack a day, it was a 12 pack in one sitting. You know, 'cause we get home, we finally get to crack open that first beer. That one beer leads to another and leads to another. Next thing I know, I've already swallowed about 12 different pills today because the doctors told me to, and I just had a 12-pack of beer. Mm. It's probably not the best route to go.
Yeah, not a good mixture, typically.
So, yeah, and, you know, just so you guys can get a pretty decent visual, I'm about a good 5'7 on a good day. And back when I was going through these struggles, I was well over 200 pounds. And I mean, I was just gaining tons and tons of weight, you know, due to the pharmaceuticals, due to mainly the alcohol, I can say. And I mean, just getting very overweight, not really caring. Like I said, I was a zombie to society. I didn't feel like doing anything. I didn't feel like being social, nothing like that. So one day, honestly, I woke up and I said, this isn't me. This isn't good for me. This isn't what I should be doing. I need to find other routes.
Right.
So went along the route of just a self-healing plan, looked at all the different routes, looked at everything. And when I was looking around, I saw that cannabis was becoming, you know, legalized in the state of Florida, and it was going up for vote. And I was just like, man, this is a great opportunity. You know, why don't I get out there and try to raise awareness for this? So just continuing my search, I find Weed for Warriors. Now just a little background, on Weed for Warriors. This is a national level organization. We have 20 plus chapters worldwide. And it started out in the California area, and I'm glad that I did enough research to find this team, because if it wasn't for Weed for Warriors, honestly, God knows where I'd be. Now, just a little background for Weed for Warriors. Our mission at the Weed for Warriors Project is to help veterans find healing through cannabis, fellowship, and community-based projects. Honestly, we are veterans making a difference, and we're taking action to stop the 22-plus veteran suicides that happen each and every day. We all know that crazy number of 22, you know, statistics, you know, wanted to bring that number down just to make us feel comfortable. But I mean, you know, now they have us sitting at 20 plus veterans. I mean, that plus is still there. So why not just keep the 22?
Right.
You know, like I don't know why they even did that. And then when you look at the statistics, they didn't even take numbers of all 50 states. If I'm not mistaken, they only took like 25, 26 states. They didn't even take all 50.
Wow, that's incredible. And we're speaking with Brandon Limpridge. Brandon is the head of the Miami chapter of Weed for Warriors, a U.S. Army veteran, briefly an Air Force veteran before that, as he told us. And it sounds like when you got out, Brandon, life kind of spiraled a little bit out of control with the opioids that you were prescribed, as well as drinking along with those opioids, as you said, ballooning up to over 200 pounds at 5'7". You talked about waking up one day and just making a change. Was there anything that led to it, or was it just a realization that just kind of dawned on you? How did that happen?
Honestly, there were a lot of, you know, see, I saw a lot of my friends growing up passing away, and a lot of them were passing away due to alcohol-related incidents. And I mean, I'm not even going to lie, and I don't mind sharing this. I mean, I have two DUIs myself. Nobody should even have one. Right. So, I mean, I taught myself a lesson, you know. I got one, and then I thought, yeah, you know, it's never going to happen again. Yet the second one was a lot worse. I mean, the second one, I woke up. And I was on the road. So, I mean, that's the level that it got to. Like, I came back out of my, you know, blackout stage, and I was on the road. Thankfully, I was, you know, nowhere near anybody or whatnot. I was literally just driving down a dirt road. But, I mean, how did I get to that dirt road? What if I would have hit somebody? I mean, all of the different things started playing into my head. And I mean, regardless of, you know, what physically led to it, I mean, there still had to be some type of change. And I mean, before I altered my state of mind, you know, I made the change, you know, before that.
Mm. And what kind of benefit has Weed for Warriors had for you personally? And have you seen the organization have for others? Of course, your organization, Weed for Warriors, as you've talked about it, kind of lobbies to get the veterans who are prescribed these narcotics, essentially, off of those and onto marijuana as another option. So how has it benefited you overall, and how have you seen it benefit your fellow veterans?
Now, when it comes to that, I mean, cannabis has honestly changed my life completely. You know, I used it back in, you know, my high school days, and I used it just to be the cool kid, you know, in the back, you know, and just, you know, getting this feeling of, you know, we even use quotations on this, you know, high, you know. A lot of us veterans, I mean, yeah, we'll use cannabis at the beginning and we'll get that high effect. But I can tell you right now, I have been using cannabis now since February. So we're now almost reaching November. So, you know, quite some time. It's been over 6 months, you know, and honestly, I don't feel high anymore. I get medicated. You know, so now that I'm feeling, you know, the actual medicinal side of what cannabis can do, I mean, I don't even take any pills anymore. You know, right. I might take a Tylenol or take an aspirin here or there, you know, but I went from 12 pills to none. Mm. And I mean, you know, seeing coming together with all these veterans each and every month, we do have our meeting. We have one big group meeting, and we all meet up. We cook dinner. We link up together, you know, we talk, we get to vibe, you know, and it has changed a lot of people just due to the fact that, you know, I'll go ahead and I'll share this story because I'm trying to think of how to explain it. But I mean, there is no explaining Weed for Warriors. You have to physically be there, you know. That's kind of, I guess, why I'm getting so caught up. But I mean, a little story that I can use, a daughter of one of the veterans that are part of my chapter, she gave me a phone call, and she called me and she was like, are you the president? And I'm like, I wish I had that much power, but you know, yeah, you know, I'm the president of an organization. Yeah, like, you know, I help your dad out. I was like, how's it going? I was like, what's going on? And then she's like, well, I just wanted to say thank you. Sorry. And I'm like, thank you. Thank you for what? And she's just like, well, ever since my daddy started going to your meetings, he's been the best daddy ever. And I was just like, well, what do you mean by that? And then she's like, well, he threw all his other medicine from the doctor in the garbage. And now he uses his other medicine, which he said that he gets from you, and you're like his new doctor. And she's like, and I like my daddy now better than, you know, before. So, I mean, when you hear things like that, I mean, that's what Weed for Warriors is. And that's what Weed for Warriors has done for many, 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 many veterans. And like I said, this is a worldwide organization. So, I mean, if this is the effect that I'm having on veterans down south in Miami, I mean, I could imagine what, you know, some stories that others may have around the world. So, I mean, if that doesn't explain Weed for Warriors in a nutshell, I mean, I don't really know what else will.
And we're speaking with the head of the Miami chapter of Weed for Warriors, Brandon Limprich. Now, Brandon, you know, there are certain stereotypes that come across with the pothead mystique, where people think, well, if you're smoking weed, you're probably not doing much of anything else. But Weed for Warriors, the Miami chapter specifically, proving that's not the case, because as I understand it, members of your chapter have gone down to do some work trying to help out in Puerto Rico. So what can you tell us about those members of Weed for Warriors who've gone down to lend a hand in Puerto Rico and what they've been seeing down there?
Most definitely, most definitely. Now, before we get into detail with Puerto Rico, just so everyone is aware, every chapter within Weed for Warriors, we have really no rules or, you know, one specific direction that we have to go. You know, nothing like that. So with the Miami chapter, with all the, you know, destruction that has been happening all over, we decided, hey, we're able bodies. You know, we, as long as we have cannabis, we can be active. We can do the things, you know, that we'd like to do. Why don't we become some type of, you know, disaster relief chapter? You know, so immediately when Harvey hit down in Texas, we were boots on the ground there. Key West reached out to us and they needed help. We're still down in Key West. Every weekend, a different team is going out there and we're still actively helping there. We even went down to Everglades City because, I mean, that was destroyed down there as well. Now in Puerto Rico, these guys out here, they hopped on a Royal Caribbean cruise ship by themselves. How they did it, I have no idea, but they told me, Prez, we're getting it done and we're going to Puerto Rico. I said, hey guys, be safe, whatever you need, try to contact me and I'll make sure it gets there. You know, and they're out there now. You probably have heard of them or will know them as the Warfighter Disaster Response Team. And that's kind of, I guess, the name that they're calling themselves out there. And they've been out there for about a month now. They are expected home on the first of the month just to kind of regroup. A couple of them are going to return back to their families, you know, and kind of regroup or whatnot. Now, Vice President, on the other hand, Nesky Hernandez, Marine Corps veteran, he called me and he was like, hey, Prez, I got some issues. And I'm like, issues? He's like, yeah, man. He's like, I might be coming home, picking up my dog, grabbing up my my last bit of personal belongings, and I might be heading over here full time. And I'm like, well, what do you mean? And he's like, well, there's way too much work to be done. They're forcing me to go home. So I'm just going to go home, grab a couple things, and I'm going back out there. They are going all over the island. Right now, they are currently stationing themselves in Mayagüez, which is on the west side of the island. And they're just there. They kind of, I guess we can say, took over the airport. I mean, not much traffic is going in and out of there. So they're sleeping on cots right now, and they're doing everything that they can each and every day. They try to post whatever they can. And they also have a You Caring account, which I'll say this now. It's youcaring.com/WeHelpForIrma. That's going to be where anybody can donate any type of funds whatsoever. All of those funds are keeping these, you know, men and women, because women are out there as well from the team. I didn't even know that some of them, that another group was going out there, but I'm guessing that's going to be, you know, the ride back. just because no airlines are still, you know, doing flights or whatnot. And if they are doing flights, they're ridiculously priced. I'm hearing that, you know, out there in Puerto Rico, it's $5 a gallon for gas and about almost $15 for a 10-pound bag of ice.
Wow. And of course, anyone who's been down to the islands down there, ice is extremely important. I mean, if you don't have electricity, your only way of keeping food, your only way of keeping milk from going rotten is going to be ice. And that amount, that cost just for a bag of ice is shocking. And we're speaking with Brandon Limprich. He is the head of the Miami chapter, the president of the Miami chapter of Weed for Warriors. And some of that organization's members are down helping out in Puerto Rico now. As far as what they've been able to do and the work that they're doing, what are some of the things that they've been able to help out with down there? I mean, there's some infrastructural things that it's going to take huge construction crews and government contracts and things like that, but what are the Weed for Warriors folks that have headed down to Puerto Rico, what have they been able to help out with, and what do they see as the biggest needs still in Puerto Rico?
Well, they've been able to help out with a couple different things. They are receiving donations. With all the cash donations that they get, what they're doing is that they're grabbing that physical money. And yes, they know that people are price gouging out there. But we're warriors, you know, we're going to argue until we get what we want. And that's, I guess, the way that they've been doing things out there, you know, just kind of bullying the bullies, you know, and, we're able to get these ice bags for cheaper. We're getting all of the materials needed. I just saw now, I guess the main factor was baby items. So they got literally four vans filled with baby items like diapers, baby wipes, baby clothes, anything that you can think of. They got four vans filled with them, and they're locating themselves wherever they can. So I'm not really sure where exactly they're going to be giving out these donations. But they're going all over. A lot of these donations, physical donations, like let's say if you send a 24 pack of water and you send it right now, it's probably not going to get to wherever you physically wanted it to go. A lot of people are having that issue. You know, the people are donating, and then they're watching the news hoping to see that their donation, you know, at least gets there, but it's not even getting there, you know? Right. So people are honestly, you know, each and every day they're dying. They're dying. They're passing away, and there's no real help out there. We've grabbed Divi systems, to be able to get clean water to them. All of their water has been contaminated. It's disgusting. What people have been drinking because they have no other choice but to drink it.
Right.
So we've gotten you know, some Divi systems out there for them to have clean water. Then whatever donations we can give, you know, we've been giving out donations just to families, like to their direct home. We're not going to be at a physical location, hey, find us here. No, we're going to their doorstep and being like, how can we help you? And if we can't physically help you with the destruction of your home, at least take some of our donations that we're going to give to you. Mm-hmm. That's honestly how they've been going day by day. One of their main projects has been at the zoo. When they got there, a bunch of animals were trapped under the debris. They were able to save a bunch of the animals, which was great. I believe they're still trying to rebuild that zoo. So just little by little, day by day, they're doing whatever they can. Whatever they can get done, they're getting it done. I know that they are going to come back, and when they do come back, they're going to try and recruit more veterans. So any veteran in the Miami area, any veteran anywhere, if you'd like to honestly participate and get with this organization and do something real and do something, you know, that's going to make a real difference, you know, instead of donating your time and money to all of these organizations that are just, you know, just the regular corporate ran, you know, scene. I mean, they're just going to funnel all your cash. They're going to spread it to a bunch of other, you know, organizations, and they're micromanaging. They're micromanaging everything that they get. Right. They need to start, you know, physically doing. And that's what we're doing out in Puerto Rico.
And we've been speaking with Brandon Limprich, who is the president of the Miami chapter of Weed for Warriors, and some of their members have head down to Puerto Rico to give some help down there, to get boots on the ground, start helping it fix things. And Brandon, we're running out of time here, but very quickly, if people want to find out more about Weed for Warriors and more about what you guys are doing in Puerto Rico, is there a website, a Facebook page? Where can they go to find out?
You can find Weed for Warriors, Miami chapter. You can find us on Instagram. Which is WFWP_Miami. If you're not on Instagram, you can find us on Facebook. Facebook, just simply type in Weed for Warriors Miami chapter. You can find us there. If you want to keep in touch with everything going on in Puerto Rico, go ahead and follow the vice president. You can find him on Instagram as well at NesQuick420. That's NesQuick and the numbers 420.
You're listening to The Morning Briefing here on CBS Radio's ConnectingVets.com. Have a great Monday. See you tomorrow.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.